shoulder fake to the rack. Oh, my goodness. Wayne Wade.
Caps up a three.
Bam! Jimmy Butler, big time onion.
Side jumper off the mark.
Oh, back of right hand. Felicia right in the mug of Miles Plumlee.
Throw it.
Oh, my
down,
gosh.
Big man. Throw it down.
On the new home of the Chicago Bulls, this is Chicago Bulls Live. And now, here's Steve Cashel.
And good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Chicago Bulls Live here on WLSAM 890, our weekly look inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA. I'm Steve Cashel. Our first guest today is the Windy City Bulls head coach, Nate Lenzer. Nate doing a wonderful job with his D-League affiliate of the Chicago Bulls, the Windy City Bulls. And Nate, thanks for joining us here on Chicago Bulls Live.
Glad you had me. Thanks, Steve.
Well, I know the team recently hit the road for a 10-day road trip, Nate, with five games on the West Coast, finishing the trip with two straight victories at Salt Lake City and Reno. Can you tell us what it was like to be on the road for that long a time, and do you feel that it helped build some good team chemistry?
I thought the trip was a positive experience for our guys. You know, it's coming right off the All-Star break for us, and it kind of came at a good time for us just because we had had two assignment players from the Trailblazers right before the All-Star break, and even Denzel Valentine had played with us for a few games, so it gave kind of our core D-League players a chance to kind of play a little bit as they kind of take a back seat anytime we get NBA players, which they understand and which we welcome. But it was a nice opportunity for those guys who have been practicing and playing throughout the year to get a chance to go on the road and get some quality minutes themselves. So, yeah, it was a good five-game trip. The first game, we battled against the Northern Arizona team. We played the LA Defenders in the second game, who's the best team in the Western Conference, and we had lost one of our players early in that game to a foot injury, Tom Walkup, and really had a chance to beat them and played a very good game. Had a very good game against Santa Cruz, just fell a little short, and then, like you said, we had two very good victories to end the trip, and then after that, it was good to get back home to Chicago.
And, Coach, how about some of the off-court bonding time? Did the guys take advantage of some of that?
You know, life in the D-League a little bit. The one good thing I would say about our West Coast trip is when we were out there, we were playing a lot of games. So we've come off a stretch of 9 games in 14 days, so there hasn't been a lot of downtime per se. But anytime you're going through airports and you're going two different situations, bus trips, going to different cities, and you're together as a team, it's just a good bonding experience. Like you said, we didn't get a chance to do much special together, but when you're going from Arizona to LA to Santa Cruz to Salt Lake and Reno, you know, some of those guys have never been to the West Coast, so it was a good time to spend that time together.
Absolutely. Visiting with Windy City Bulls head coach Nate Lenzer. I'm Steve Cashel. This is Chicago Bulls Live here on WLSAM 890. Windy City recently had a stretch winning 4 out of 5 games. Nate, tell us who have been some of the key players behind the success as of late.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think all of our players have done a good job. Some of our reserves, especially those last two games on the West Coast, and coming back to Chicago, John Octius and Wes Saunders are two guys that honestly didn't get a ton of playing time throughout the season and have really come on and really solidified our bench. They got extended minutes, and I was just very pleased with how they capitalized with that. One of our acquisitions, Jarrell Eddy, who we got about a month and a half ago, continues to really shoot the ball well and score the ball well for us. He's been very consistent for us, and you know, I would just say, though, from top to bottom, obviously guys like Al McKinney, who represented us in the All-Star game, has put up some big numbers night in and night out and stays consistent around that double-double line. So all in all, our core guys, I'm pleased with all of them, and I just love how they compete, and it's exciting to see them grow as basketball players.
fantastic. Again, Nate Lenzer, our coach of the Windy City Bulls. Now, Windy City will play six of their final eight regular season games at the Sears Center Arena in Hoffman Estates. Always a great atmosphere, fans. We hope you get out there. Nate, can you tell us some of the positives about being able to play at home during that final stretch of the regular season?
Well, it's like you said, there's been a lot of work that people put into bringing the Windy City Bulls to Hoffman Estates and playing in the Sears Center. And it's been neat to see the crowds get bigger and bigger as the season has progressed. You know, it's kind of the new buzz in town, and we've got some good publicity. Obviously, it's been great to have the six Chicago Bulls players play with us at different times throughout the season. And I think the fans that have come out have seen that the quality of basketball is exciting. We try to play the right way. We try to really compete for 48 minutes. And you never really know who you're going to play against. There's going to be college guys that, you know, that you watched that maybe you saw in the NCAA tournament or in the Big Ten Conference or in the Midwest that are neat to see. And you never know when you're going to see former NBA vets or guys that could be on assignment. So we're excited. We've got, like you said, six more home games, and we look forward to ending the season strong and continuing to get better.
Absolutely. Again, our guest, Nate Lenzer. He's the head coach of the Windy City Bulls. Now, Nate, the Chicago Bulls, we all know, have assigned players to Windy City periodically throughout this regular season. Jaron Grant has been there, Paul Zipser as well, and Bobby Portis. They've all sported that Windy City Bulls uniform at one point during, and they've been playing very well of late here for the Chicago Bulls. Now, can you tell us how you feel their assignments help prepare them to reach this level of success during the Bulls' regular season?
I think, as we know, you know, the 82-game season, there's a lot of moving parts that go into it. And rotations can change, whether it's from injuries or development or trades, as we know. And I just think the Windy City Bulls and our team specifically just provides a great example of how guys who may be out of the rotation for whatever the reason gives them a chance to get more minutes, get more shots, keep them in shape, and work on their game and continue to work on their confidence in their game. And it's been neat to see our team get utilized to help our organization, which is what we're all about. You hit on those guys, and even Denzel Valentine and Chris Felicio have come through as well. And, you know, it's kind of neat. The other night I was watching in Golden State, and we're closing the game, obviously, with Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade. But then, you know, Paul Zipser and Chris Felicio and Bobby Portis are out there as well. So it's just neat to see us help out the Chicago Bulls. And we're obviously there anytime they need us, and on a personal note, it's just nice to see those guys as well. You know, I spent a couple summer leagues with those guys. Obviously, I was with the Chicago Bulls last year, so there's that level of familiarity for our guys and for myself. And like I said, at the end of the day, we want to be helping the Chicago Bulls as much as we can, and we just want to continue to be that bridge for them.
And final question for Nate Lenzer, our head coach of the Windy City Bulls. Nate, thanks for joining us. Take us back to last year, your position with the Bulls. Tell us what that was and how much you've enjoyed here being the head coach of the new Bulls D-League affiliate.
Well, I was with Coach Hoiberg his last 2 years at Iowa State, and when he asked me to come with him to the Chicago Bulls, there was obviously no hesitation from my standpoint. Obviously, I think the world of him as a coach, and as fate would have it, my father from Illinois, so I grew up a Chicago Bulls fan as well. So getting the opportunity to work for a guy who I really respect and for the organization that I followed my whole life, it was just a no-brainer for me and just a great thrill. And it was just something last year I didn't take any day for granted. And when the opportunity arose to lead the Windy City Bulls this year, I just looked at it as another opportunity to help the organization that I love working for and working with, and just in a different capacity. And it's, from my standpoint, I get to obviously improve my coaching prowess and get a chance to lead my own team. But like I said, just be in a different role where I'm still helping Coach Hoiberg, helping the front office, and ultimately helping the Chicago Bulls organization.
Fantastic. Nate, thanks so much for joining us here on Chicago Bulls Live. Continued success and congratulations for everything you've done with Windy City and our Bulls organization throughout this past season.
Thank you. Much appreciated, Steve.
All righty. Nate Lenzer, he is the head coach of the Windy City Bulls. Up next here on Chicago Bulls Live, we go one-on-one with Mike Bray, the head basketball coach of the University of Notre Dame. Stay with us on Chicago Bulls Live. Back with more after this.
This is the new home of Chicago Bulls basketball. Hear every Chicago Bulls game here. WLS AM 890. Now back to the Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. Our look inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball, the NBA, and beyond. And beyond means also the college game. And right down the road in South Bend, Mike Bray doing a marvelous job with his Notre Dame Fighting Irish. And Chuck Swirsky had a chance to visit with the Notre Dame men's basketball coach.
Mike, we can go a lot of different places. I know our time is limited. But first, I want to ask you, I read a great story about your parents.
Sure.
And let's talk about your mom first. She was very influential in your life. She was an Olympian. Give me an idea about how she shaped and molded Mike Bray.
You know, she was the ultimate competitor. She really was. A 56 Olympian. She was swimming and competing in women's athletics, you know, back in the 40s and 50s when there weren't a lot of opportunities for women. She was so ahead of her time. But the ultimate competitor, Olympian. She was a great educator and teacher, as was my father. So the dinner table talk around our house was them and how they interacted with their students. What always struck me about both of them, my mother and father, was their pupils or their players who played for them or swam for them would come up to me when they weren't around and said, man, I love your parents. I love your dad. He's been great with me. And I think that was like, I want to do that. Like, I want to have impact like that. And so in a lot of ways, I feel I'm still in the family business. We're all educators. My sister is an elementary educator down in Florida. My brother is in education. But my mom was the ultimate competitor, very intense, still competitive right up till the day she died. Would call me when she was 83, and she'd say, "Yeah, I'd wait for her to say, Mike, how you doing?" And she'd go, "Are we ready for Duke tomorrow?" So, you know, there was an edge about her that I probably got a piece of, and thank God I did.
Okay, so obviously no social commentaries, networking. In 1956, do you have any video of her in the Olympics?
I do, and I brought it home the other night. My son is with me right now for a couple weeks with my granddaughter and his wife, and I had some friends over, and she had an 8mm camera that she snuck into the opening ceremonies in Melbourne, Australia. She snuck it in, and we were watching it the other night, and of course, the athlete's village in 1956 was not the best of shape compared to what they build for him now.
It was like the NBA players on a yacht.
It was exactly. She had footage of the track guys warming up. She has footage, get this, of Bill Russell and Casey Jones going into the dining hall. They were on the 56 gold medal basketball team. She has footage of her and Johnny Weissmuller.
Wow.
Tarzan.
Yes.
I was trying to explain to the young people who
Tarzan
was. Johnny Weissmuller and her were, you know, he was on the men's, she was on the women's team. So we're looking at it, and my daughter-in-law was going off on the opening ceremony events. They had white gloves, and it was just, it was unbelievable. We watched it during the Olympics because every Olympic year, you know, I always think of her so much because that was her time, and we would talk almost every night during the Olympics.
All right. I do want to get to X's and O's, and I really want to talk Notre Dame basketball, obviously, but I also want to address a subject that's obviously very sensitive, but a lot of people probably can relate to what you're going to discuss, and that's dementia. Your father unfortunately passed away from that illness, and a lot of people are dealing with that. As a son and also as somebody who's gone through this, what can you share with us?
I tell you what, I that was the hardest to watch him, you know, the last 6 months. You know, I didn't realize how much my mother was covering for him the previous couple years, but she really did. And then once we lost her, it was evident that he just could not take care of himself, and he deteriorated really badly after my mother passed. It was about 6 months to the day that he passed, but it was a blessing. He was in such bad shape. And, you know, I've shared and talked about with other people my age who have parents in their 80s now and are going through it. It is really a cruel, cruel disease, affliction, whatever you want to call it. And so, you know, you're involved with a lot of charities when you're a coach, and you have a platform, and we do Coaches Versus Cancer, and I do a thing for the Heart Association. And I do want to get into some stuff with Alzheimer's and dementia and see if we can maybe get a cure for that. Because my brother and sister and I were each, we were each other's support system, and you need that because it's really painful to watch.
You're entering your 17th year?
17, yes.
It goes quickly.
It does.
Wow.
It does. I can't believe I've been out here in the beautiful Midwest for 17, but it's been a great fit.
Well, it has been a great fit. And obviously the Digger was Digger, and he had a tremendous run, a great run. And I love the way you've embraced him, and he's open to coming to practice. And it's fantastic, where a lot of coaches would be looking over their shoulder saying, okay, like, come on. But when that job opened up, did you ask for help to get that job? Did you put out, like, the moment that job opened up, I'm going after that job? How do you get to be the head coach at Notre Dame?
It's a great story, the drama behind it, because I was involved with it when Matt Doherty got it. Okay. I interviewed and did not get the job in 99, and Matt Doherty was hired. Never in my wildest dreams did I think that would open again in my window to move. So when
because he left to go to North Carolina, his alma mater.
Right. And but when he took it and I didn't get it, I'm thinking, okay, well, he's going to be at Notre Dame a while, so that job will never open. What would be the next one for me if I continue to be successful at Delaware? Well, Roy Williams, talk about, you know, the domino effect in college basketball. I always kid Roy. I said, Roy, thanks for turning down a North Carolina job, because that set Matt up to take it, and he went to Carolina. So a year later, with a whole new AD, I'm back in the mix and I get the job. And it's crazy. I think because I was involved the last time and probably, you know, was a runner-up or a strong candidate, you know, they quickly reached out to me. And I'll never forget Missy Conboy, our associate AD, who's still there, called me at my basketball office in Delaware and was kind of sheepish because they didn't hire me the last time. Like, maybe I would. Well, you know, I don't know if you'd be interested, and, you know, because we didn't hire you last. I said, Missy, nothing's changed. I think I'm a great fit for where do I need to be? Tell me where I need to be. I think I'm a great fit. So, fortunately, Kevin White hired me. Monk Malloy was the president at the time, and it's just been a fabulous fit. I think it's always one that I've been trained for, you know, being at Duke and being assistant there and dealing with admission standards and having to recruit a pool of kids that are going to compete academically. I was used to doing that, and we had to do that at Delaware as well. So I thought it was a fabulous fit, and, you know, 17 years later, we're still doing it, and I'm honored to be the guy at Notre Dame. It's such a powerful place. It amazes me still after 17 years, the reach of our brand worldwide.
Yes. Digger, I can still, as I'm doing this podcast with you right now, Mike, he wrote that note when he was a young coach there at Parsegan about one day he wanted to be the head coach, basketball coach at Notre Dame. When you were a kid, what were your expectations when you got into coaching? Where did you want to be?
You know, it's funny, when they hired me, the media, you know, they wanted something juicy, like, did you watch Notre Dame football as a kid on Sundays? I said, absolutely not. No, I didn't. I watched Notre Dame basketball, though, and Digger's teams were fabulous, and Trapuka and Jackson and Paxson and all of them, I watched them all. So that was my connection. I really thought I was going to be a high school coach. My dad was a high school athletic director. I was around him all the time. I was Morgan Wooten's assistant at DeMatha High School. And the year before, I tried to get the job at Churchill High School in Potomac, Maryland. I'm a physical education major, and they didn't have a teaching position. So I couldn't get the job. I go back to DeMatha a year later. I'm assistant at Duke. But I always thought of myself as, I'm going to be a high school coach. Coach Wooten had a huge impact on me. My dad were high school educators. I said, that'd be a good life. I've seen my parents live that way. Coach Wooten was such a mentor, and I respected him. I said, I think I'll do that. And you know, you end up going to Duke and you get on a different track. I still kind of draw, though. I was a classroom teacher at DeMath. I taught U.S. history, six periods a day to juniors. And, of course, back when you teach at a Catholic high school, you take the oath of poverty. I was working bingos on the weekend. You're doing all of it. But you ended up on the college route. But the high school experience that I had as a teacher and coach, I draw on every day, 17, well, I'm 22 years into being a head coach now. So it was a great experience for me to learn.
When we return, part two of Chuck's interview with Notre Dame head basketball coach Mike Bray. Stay with us on Chicago Bulls Live. You're listening to WLS AM 890.
Everything you need to start your week smarter and happier. Big John and Ray. Monday morning starting at 5 on WLS AM 890.
And we're back on Chicago Bulls Live on this Sunday afternoon. We now present part two of Chuck Swirsky's interview with Mike Bray, the head men's basketball coach at the University of Notre Dame.
All right, for the benefit, because we have a lot of people, fortunately, listening to our podcast, a lot of high school coaches, college assistant coaches, mm-hmm. when they see that, when we promote the fact you're going to be on, they're going to listen and they're going to say, you know what, here's this guy, gets a job as an assistant coach at Duke.
Yeah.
How do you know when is the right time to leave?
Well, I was really fortunate because DeMath was not your typical high school program. Coach Wooten at the time was the all-time winningest coach, unbelievably respected. I played for him, then I came back and coached with him, and we had a lot of really good players, which means every head coach in the ACC and the Big East were swinging through and watching our guys. I'm the young guy on the staff, and Coach Wooten is letting me run parts of practice. What a great audition for Dean Smith, Mike Krzyzewski, Lefty Giselle, Terry Holland, to sit there and go, who's this young guy? Yeah. I was getting an audition just like our players were. And, you know, so the Duke situation came up. They recruited Danny Ferry really hard. That was a guy they had to get. And you could say when Mike Kay got him, it kind of swung it his way and away from Carolina for a while and really got him going because he was the National High School Player of the Year. Well, Mike was younger. He had an opening. And he wanted a younger guy that was going to be with him a while, not somebody who was just going to come in and want to be a head coach after 3 years and use it as a resume builder. And I needed time. Bobby Bender, who's now with Memphis.
Yes.
Bobby Bender was the top assistant. He and I got really close through the recruitment of Ferry. And I think Bobby Bender probably got me the job and said, I could really work with Mike instead of these other candidates. And so I'm always indebted to Bobby at the time, too. So I was with Mike 8 years. It was an unbelievable run. We go to 6 Final Fours in 8 seasons.
Think about that.
Yeah, it was. I was spoiled. You know, my first year, the year before, George Balanis, who worked for Puma, who was our shoe contract, he gave me a frequent flyer ticket to go to the Final Four, and I got tickets from another coach, and I'm sitting up in the nosebleeds. The next year in Kansas City, I'm on the Duke bench at the Final Four. So, and of course, George Balanis was then going like, you got to be kidding me. Now we're asking you for tickets. You know, used to freeload off us. So I've been so fortunate, but there's no question, DeMatha High School put me in a position to make that move. And then certainly Mike really trained me because Mike's whole thing was, I don't want anybody coming down here to Duke who doesn't want to be a head coach. You're going to get your hands on everything. And I did. And I was really ready to be a head coach in 95 when I went to Delaware.
So sell the program for a second. There are a lot of great programs,
yeah.
as we know. All these kids are being, you know, they're being so, as far as just yeah. the adulation, they hear everything. They're told at the age of 12 they're going to be in the NBA. Why should a kid decide, I want to play for Mike Bray?
Well, you know, guys get better with us. We have an unbelievable track record of guys getting better. We don't have one and dones, and very rarely do we have guys leave early. I've only had two, Troy Murphy and Demetrius.
But would you take a one and done?
Well, we would. I always have an open mind to that. I don't know if that's ever going to really be a fit, but you always have an open mind. We're better with 4 and sometimes 5-year guys, like Jaron Grant. He was a redshirt as a freshman. Guys have gotten better with us. Connaughton, Grant, you know, we're on a run of getting guys better. They grow up in our program. We're a little bit of a throwback. Our offensive style play is really fun. It's very efficient, and it's very NBA ready. We play a lot like the league is playing. And so I think it gets guys ready for the league. Now, let's talk about our degree. You know, it's one of those degrees, and I tell kids at some point, I don't care how good you are, Jaren Grant, they are going to take the ball from you and ask you, what else can you do? If you say you're a Notre Dame graduate, you're a Notre Dame man, you're going to be plugged into our network. And then lately, in the last 3 years, Atlantic Coast Conference, playing in what I think is the best and deepest league. So we've got really good momentum right now, you know, with our stuff. But it's a good and you know what I've told kids in the last couple of years? You're getting the teacher. You're getting me at a great time. I'm not the 38-year-old guy who just got the job. I'm not 65 trying to get to the golf course. We're really close here. Back-to-back Elite Eights. You're getting me at a great time to teach you and get you better.
The Notre Dame connection. First, let's talk about Jaren Grant and John Paxson. Paxson, of course, great player. I mean, I actually called Paxson's last game. It was in the NIT against Northwestern on St. Patrick's Day in 1983. That was his last game, and unfortunately they lost on St. Patrick's Day in Chicago. That's not supposed to happen for a Notre Dame game. But how influential has Pax been on you and your program? And then you can discuss Jaren Grant.
Well, I've always really respected John, and from afar, you know, and watching him as a player, as a pro, the class act that he is.
Yeah, he's a great man.
He is a heck of a man, first of all. And I really appreciate how supportive he has been of me. You know, he is from that old guard. You know, I didn't coach him. And you wanted to be good enough where those guys felt good about the program again. And I think they do. John has been extremely supportive. I think we support each other when we're going through ups and downs. We've gotten to be very good friends. And it's so valuable to have his support and input. He's our biggest fan. I mean, after a big win, I get a text from him all the time. And after a tough stretch, he'll check in and go, hang in there, man. And so that's important, because he really is an ambassador for us in basketball. I've been really, really thrilled to get to know him and hang with him. And I think he's going to get over for a football game here, and we usually hang up. And he talks about the Bulls, and I talk about the Irish. Jaren Grant, I couldn't be more excited that he's here with you guys in Chicago. Number one style of play. I love Fred Hoiberg. I love what he does offensively. You know, the utmost respect for him and how he coaches and teaches and how they do it offensively. Jaren is a screen roll, ball screen guy. I don't know if there's not many better decision makers off the ball screen in the whole league. And I think Bulls fans will start to see that as the year goes. You saw it a little bit in the summer league, as a matter of fact. But you get him in ball screens. He's a great reader of ball screens. And I think he is going to find his spot in this league with this team. And I'm excited that I'm only an hour and a half away and I can get to some games to see Jaren play.
Okay. I'm going to let you go. But when I was telling a friend last night, I said, yeah, we're going to interview Mike Bray. Oh, I love Mike Bray. And I got to, you know, he's always styling. My wife always tells me, hey, you know what? You got to start dressing like Mike Bray. I said, what? Well, yeah, he was where he got rid of the turtlenecks. Yeah. Is that right? I mean, well, what's going on?
Well, the old mock man, my daughter finally said, Dad, you got to get rid of that. I don't think I'm this great style guy, but she'd redress me, and you know,
I just don't wear a tie.
No, I mean, one of the running.
Why don't you wear a tie?
I just, you know, I haven't worn one in a while, and I do wear a tie to two things: funerals and weddings. I'll break out the tie to those two things, but games now. But it's a running. If I were to come out in a tie for a game, our fan base would be, they wouldn't know what to do. So now it's almost like I can't touch it. But I'm a little more comfortable with the dress shirt and the collar open than I was with the mock. But you know, maybe it's a midlife crisis. I don't know.
Okay. How about your mannerisms on the bench? Have they changed from your days at Delaware to now, where you're entering 17th season at Notre Dame?
One thing I learned after the Sweet 16 game with Wisconsin this year, I jumped off the bench like I thought it was the 48-year-old coach or the 42-year-old coach, and I popped my calf muscle, and I coached the East Regional game in a boot. So I have to remember to not be as active. I think I'm pretty poised. I try and stay calm for my guys, at least outwardly. Inside, I may be doing backflips, but I think, you know, to be poised on the sideline and, you know, seeing a little bit more of a calmer guy, I think has helped the kind of kids that we've had. I just got to remember, I can't jump off the bench anymore. I'm not the young buck I used to be.
Well, what's the greatest game you've ever been involved in?
You know,
at any level?
Yeah, you know, I there's two that come to mind. The ACC championship game when we came back against North Carolina 2 years ago and came back from down whatever we were, 10-11, and won that thing. And to go through Duke and Carolina on Tobacco Road in our second year in the ACC to win the ACC championship is it's as good as anything we've done in the history of our program. The East Regional game is against Kentucky,
yes,
in Cleveland last year. People have said, still, I still have people, refs, said that's the best basketball game I've ever seen. The energy in the building, people stood the whole time, two teams throwing big punches.
How long did it take you to decompress from that game?
You know, it took a while. You know, it's funny, the last 2 years, when you go to the Elite Eight, you have played for a long time. It takes me a month to kind of get my legs and my energy back because you are grinding hard through an ACC season, and then you play the whole month of March. But that one took a while to get over. There's no question about it. We bust back to Cleveland the next day, and you're kind of going through the game. But it was more I was getting sad about, I can't coach Grant and Connaughton anymore.
Yeah.
And we got off the bus at the Joyce Center, and there was an intramural game on the main floor. And I said, come on out, because it was the last time I was going to have all these guys together. And we took one of my favorite pictures. We're all in our sweats, kind of casual, at midcourt. I stopped the intramural game. They all gave us a standing ovation. And I had that picture in my office of that group was pretty good. And that was the last time we were going to be together.
Nice.
That's the sad thing. You lose guys. But you know what? It's exciting to see new guys like VJ Beecham and Steve Vastoria step up as leaders this year.
Wow. Well, this has been great. I appreciate your time very, very much. I know, listen, yeah, Chicago loves you. I know you probably love the city. You
love
get through here.
I love this town. I love sneaking over here. And I've been it's a favorite place to I got a couple different restaurants. But, you know, I've always been a big Bulls fan and always respected how they do it and always cheered for Pax. I'm even a bigger fan now with Jaren Grant here.
Good enough. Mike, thank you.
Thank you.
That's Chuck Swirsky with Notre Dame men's head basketball coach Mike Bray. And many thanks to Timeout Bulls, presented by Lexus and available on iTunes. Stay with us. Back with more of Chicago Bulls Live after this on WLS AM 890.
To make your drive home a little easier, Steve Dahl is here. 2 till 6 every weekday afternoon on WLS AM 890. Now back to Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live. I'm Steve Cashel. It's our inside look inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA and beyond. Special guest to close the show this week, Michelle Harris, the Director of Entertainment for the Chicago Bulls. Michelle, great to be with you. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Steve.
All right. So tell us how long you've been with the Bulls and what you do under your title of Director of Entertainment.
Sure. Yeah. I've been with the Bulls. This is my fourth season with the team. And my team of 10 people plus over 180 performers and staff on a game day.
Wow.
Put on the show that is the basketball game. So everything about the game that isn't basketball. So from the video to the lights to the performers, Benny the Bull, Lovables, the like projection on the court, their halftime acts, your anthem singers, everything about the production our team gets the fun privilege of putting together.
And you came from another organization, correct?
Yes. Yeah. I was with the New York Knicks for 13 seasons. But I grew up here in Chicago as a Bulls fan. I just so happened to go to college in New York. So I'm now back with my home team. Happy to be here. Been loving it for the last 4 years.
Wow. What did you learn about the Knicks organization and how they do game entertainment to bring it here to what we do with the Bulls?
Yeah, you know, I learned so much working for the Knicks. I definitely, sort of cut my teeth, if you will. They do everything on a world-class level, elite level, with, you know, really strong attention to detail. Only the best at the Mecca of basketball. So that, I think, that sort of perspective I've brought to the Bulls. You know, we have a strong sense of, providing quality entertainment, the best that Chicago has to offer. Bulls fans are the best fans in sports, so we've got to give them the best. So that I think is what I brought from the Garden over here to the United Center.
Absolutely. And talk a little bit about what goes into it. Again, we're visiting with Michelle Harris, Director of Entertainment for the Chicago Bulls. You guys do such a marvelous job, but people have no idea behind the scenes a typical day, how you prepare for game night or game day. What is that like?
Yeah, sure. I mean, our whole preparation starts the second the season schedule comes out in August. So we're plotting our theme nights, which we're going to get to in a little bit, and prepping all the production and the entertainment acts for those. But yeah, on a month-to-month basis, we're just fine-tuning each and every single game, who's performing, from the Lovables to your Bulls kids to your 312 crew, what's Benny going to do, which halftime act is going to perform. So it takes quite a bit of time, and every single game day we start right from the morning. We're talking through the scripts, we're rehearsing, our hosts are rehearsing their lines, we're picking every single song we're playing in the night. By the way, how many songs do you think we play in a night?
Boy, I have no idea. They're all different, though, aren't they?
Yeah.
Tell me how many.
Yeah, the last game I counted, it was 165 songs.
Really? During a one Bulls game?
In one Bulls game.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so our Bulls DJs do a great job of curating the music and tailoring it to the theme, and making sure every game is special and unique.
Again, our guest, Michelle Harris, Director of Entertainment for the Chicago Bulls. I'm Steve Cashel. This is Chicago Bulls Live. And tell us about the theme nights. Is there a theme night for every game?
Not every single game. It's a lot of work to put a theme night together when you're changing over your graphics, getting special costumes and music for all your performers. It's a good and fun production because it changes things up. You know, when you see the same thing over and over again, you kind of get bored. So we change things up. We just did our third annual country night. Last week, it was awesome. We had Michael Ray perform at halftime. His single, Think a Little Less, is like number 3 on US 99 right now. So we were excited to have him. And coming up, we've got St. Patrick's Day. We've got Latino Night. We have White Sox Night, actually, coming up soon. Y2K Night, Ja Rule is coming to perform at halftime with us for Y2K night. So I'm personally excited about that. That was sort of my heyday.
Absolutely.
And then Kids Day will be super fun. Lots of fun surprises featuring sort of mini versions of everything you would see at a Bulls game, from the players to the dancers to your host to Benny. There'll be mini versions of everything.
Visiting again with Michelle Harris, Director of Entertainment for the Chicago Bulls. This is Chicago Bulls Live. And Michelle, what's the philosophy? What are you guys kind of going after? I mean, the Bulls are known as one of the great entertainment venues. The Bulls have a really good basketball team. We love watching the Bulls play. But when people come here, they go, you know what, win or lose, that was a fun experience for the family. Is that what you guys try to incorporate?
Yeah, absolutely. That is our whole goal and why we do what we do. Because no matter what happens, we want our fans to make sure they've had an amazing, exhilarating time. I like to say, it's entertainment. The second the buzzer, there's a buzzer, we're doing our jobs. And we like to say we're tickling funny bones, pulling at heartstrings, and blowing people's minds. That's what we're doing every night.
That's awesome. Now, Michelle Harris, also as Director of Entertainment, you do things outside the United Center, right? Mm-hmm. Besides game night. I mean, there's personal appearances. You guys are doing videos. Tell us about some of the things that maybe fans don't know that you guys are involved with besides just the game experience.
So Bulls Entertainment, all of our performers, Benny, the Lovables, the Incredibles, they're out in the community working really closely with our CR department and Chicago Bulls charities to be out in the community, make appearances.
CR is?
Community Relations.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're doing a ton in the city. We do paid appearances as well, private appearances. The Lovables have a Junior Lovables program where young aspiring dancers can register and rehearse with the dancers every week and get to perform here at games.
Mm-hmm.
So we're out and about. We're pretty busy and out and about all the time. Even in the summer, we've got Lollapalooza coming up, Pitchfork. We'll be at all of these fun things all around the city.
And like you said, as soon as the season ends, you guys don't take a break.
No.
Like the players do. You dive right into how can we do it better and what worked and how can we make even a greater game experience for the next season, right? Plus your summer, I'm sure, is packed with all the other personal events.
Auditions is a big thing. Audition season is during the summer. So we're searching for our new next lovables, our new next incredibles, all of that stuff. And then we also have meetings with the NBA to talk about what was great about last season, what everybody could be doing for next year.
Michelle Harris, our guest, Director of Entertainment for the Chicago Bulls. I'm Steve Cashel. This is Chicago Bulls Live. Speaking of the NBA, Michelle, I know Commissioner Adam Silver really is impressed, and the people in the NBA offices in New York always say that game entertainment at the United Center is unlike any other. So I know you take great pride in that, but talk about sharing with the other teams, because I'm sure they're looking at you, like in Sacramento or even Los Angeles, the big cities, saying, what are they doing there at the United Center that we could incorporate, correct?
Oh, that's so nice. I mean, yeah. I think we all share ideas. I think we'll all pick up from each other. Game entertainment directors are all pretty close and tight-knit in the NBA, and so we share ideas, and then we'll put our own special spin on it. I think Chicago, we've got our own special flavor, and Bulls fans are awesome. We're really lucky to have the fans that we do that love to be entertained and interact with what we're doing, so they make our show, like, so much fun.
All right, and finally, Michelle Harris. For fans listening to us that may want to get involved, you mentioned the lovables, the junior lovables, or something for the kids, or something for the seniors, something for almost every age group, man, woman, boy, girl. How do they get in touch with you guys to see if they could someday be a part of this great game entertainment or Bulls entertainment family?
Yeah, come check out bulls.com/entertainment. You'll get to see all of our teams and all of our performers, learn a little bit about our programs and watch videos, see photos. And so, yeah, every summer we're having auditions. So, you know, come reach out. We'd love to have you to see it. We want to see what other talent Chicago has to offer to bring here to the United Center.
Fantastic. Wonderful job. Continued success. Love what you guys do. And let's just hope that we can all bring a championship, players-wise and team-wise, of this team. And then you guys, I know, are following right there.
That's
along with
on my bucket list, for sure.
Thank you. Michelle Harris, you. Director of Entertainment with the Chicago Bulls. That will do it for this edition of Chicago Bulls Live. Many thanks to our executive producer, Dave Zaslowski, our technical engineer, Jonathan Bregman, here at the United Center. Spinning the dials, it's Bill Karambelis. For Chuck Swirsky, I'm Steve Cashel, saying thanks for listening. We'll talk with you next week for another edition of Chicago Bulls Live right here on WLS AM 890.